Welcome to Farming Aotearoa with agricultural journalist Peter Burke. Hello, folks. Once again, it's time for another edition of Farming Aotearoa, sponsored by Rural News, the newspaper that gets the top stories to farmers every week. And you can link on to that newspaper if you go to our webpage. You can link on it. And in the meantime, I've got agricultural journalist Peter Burke, who works for Rural News, in with me in the studio to bring us up to date with what's been happening in the past month. So, Pete, what's on the agenda for today?
Well, Catherine, agriculture is always busy. It seems to be that there's never a dull moment in this job. I get out of bed every day and think, what story am I going to write? And then the phone rings. So, you know, it's like that. Or in the middle of the day when I'm half asleep and trying to catch a nap and suddenly there's a phone call. So there's a lot happening. The first thing I'm going to talk about today is the drought, which we're hearing a lot about. And there is, I guess, the west coast, the dairy regions of the country, the main dairy regions, Northland, Waikato, Taranaki, are really badly hit at the moment. We've also got drought issues around the top of the South Island. Those areas are really starting to struggle. I was talking to one of the air consultants the other day, and things are getting very, very tight for those people. They've had supplement there. In other words, they've had other feed they can give the cows to keep them going. But there's been very little rain. And I think Waikato is a big area, and that's one of the areas that's really being hit hard. Everyone thought it would be okay, but there was no forecast of rain coming through at the moment of any appreciable level anyway. There were little pockets in the region. They would tell you that there was a bit of rain, but they were isolated places. But by and large, the Waikato has suffered a lot. Northland is no good, and Taranaki has been terrible for a long, long time. And that's the coastal areas, particularly around Taranaki and the west coast. It's unusual. Normally we sort of associate droughts with the east coast, but this time it's the west coast. And the one comment that's made to me at the moment in terms of the dairy side of the business is that in the Waikato, they're expecting the dairy season to end prematurely, because there simply isn't the feed for the stock.
Gee.
Farmers have got to now start to what they say protect 2026, which means that essentially they've got to keep those cows in a good condition so that when they calve, they'll be able to milk well, that they'll have the feed to feed those cows and get the benefit of peak milk. So what we're going to see in the next coming weeks probably is the cow cull accelerated in the Waikato probably, and in other areas. In other words, the cows that aren't producing that might otherwise be held off for a month or so to milk you're going to see some of the farmers, if they're not already doing once-a-day milking, probably going to once-a-day milking. Or they might just simply be drying off their cows and saying, okay, we're going to let them, you know, we're going to try and put a halt to the whole thing and save what supplements we've got, so that we can feed those when we come into the winter and into the spring, which sometimes can be tricky. There's a bit of a difficult balancing period of time. The good news in the Waikato, I'm told, is that the maize crop has been very good. Now, I was a bit surprised at that. I was up the Central North Island recently. I didn't think the maize was all that good, but according to my contact, who's very, very good and up with the play, that in the Waikato in particular, there is good maize and the yields are high. That's very encouraging for farmers, knowing that there is that supply of supplement there. The other thing that's going in the favour of the dairy farmers is that the price of supplement can sometimes, you know, be a bit volatile, shall we say, want of a better word. This time it's not. There is a consistency of price, which means that the prices are somewhat consistent. Therefore, farmers have a better idea of where they're going. And the other good news for dairy farmers particularly is that the payout for dairy is still looking very good. So there's optimism in the dairy sector by and large. If you look at the sheep and beef farmers, it's not so good because they don't have the prices of lamb is crawling upwards, I think is the best way of describing it.
Crawling.
Crawling. They're not jumping, they're crawling. Yes, we've turned the corner, but my golly, it's a slow race. It's to the line. Beef is doing all right. And then on top of all of that, you've got, for those farmers, you've got the, we'll talk about it in a minute too, about the situation worldwide geopolitically. But The other thing we are seeing is a little bit more fertiliser going on some of the sheep and beef farms, which is good, but not much on the hill country. So we're going to see, I suspect, in the coming years, because of the prices, particularly for beef and lamb, less money available. Farmers will inevitably cut fertiliser. It's one of the things they can cut. Labour costs are another thing that will go, you know, there'll be that movement. We may see a movement also to cattle, I suspect, at the expense of sheep to some extent, because sheep are labour-intensive, probably more so than cattle are. So there's all those factors. There's a whole sort of cauldron of things happening at the moment in the sector around the livestock sector particularly. I don't know about deer, to be fair, I haven't got a clue. Also, talking to the Rural Support Trust, they're the people that's available, which when a drought is declared, so there's drought declared now in Northland, Waikato, Taranaki, and in Tasman, Marlborough areas. And that allows some money to be made available to these Rural Support Trusts. They're organisations are made up of local people who can help farmers with getting through these droughts. In some cases, it allows tax relief, I think, to farmers. There's some breaking on that one. Banks also see it as a chance maybe to recognise that they've just pulled back a little bit on things, let farmers get through. And then there's a lot of work being done to try and get farmers together, like having events, like having dinners, barbecues, seminars on how to deal with a drought, to get them together so that they don't feel alone. Because it must be very hard if you're just working by yourself, you've got your family there, all you've got around you, and the next neighbour might be 10 km down the road potentially, or who knows. But to get people together and to have a beer and a chat and bring the families around, that's some of the work that the Rural Support Trust does, and it does it very, very well indeed. So you've got to look at that. There's a lot of agencies involved in this. I'm talking a lot about it, but it's probably the biggest single issue at the moment in farming in New Zealand. You've got the Ministry for Primary Industries. They've got an outfit called On-Farm Support, they have a role in bringing together some of these disparate groups like Beef and Lamb, who represent sheep farmers, Dairy and Zed, which represents dairy farmers, and others, and bring them together, and again, trying to play that coordinating role to get people together, to deal with the situation better, and to get farmers to feel they're not alone in this. Yes, there's going to be some heartache, probably not so much dairy. I just wonder about sheep and beef a little bit. I haven't heard too much said about it, but my heart goes out to some of those guys who must be struggling in some of that country to say, well, what the hell do I do next? I don't know. It's pretty tricky. Yeah.
Gee, it's a hard job anyway, let alone having all those extra pressures put on you.
It is, yeah.
And March can particularly be quite a dry month anyway, can't it?
It is. And the other problem you've got is that, of course, we're seeing now particularly the days are getting shorter. Mm. The temperatures are dropping quite rapidly. We're seeing quite low temperatures at night. We're seeing heavy dews.
Yeah.
And that, of course, means that the grass is not growing. I mean, just to go and look at your lawn, that's what I would notice, that for me, if the lawn's not growing quickly, I can just about tell you what the pasture is doing out in the paddocks as well.
Yeah.
And I was up the other week up in the Manawatu, and just to see what I saw was what I call a green drought. In other words, there was green pasture, but there's not much grass there.
Yeah, it's not growing really.
It's green drought, and that's what we're getting. And if this continues, that's not good. Hence we're coming back to this issue of saying, okay, the dairy farmers are going to look at drying their cows off early, getting rid of the cows that aren't producing anything or never will produce anything. You don't want animals here that are not going to ever produce a calf next year. If they're dry, get rid of them. Just really maximising what stock they need to get through the next season. And that's what we're seeing at the moment.
Okay.
Big deal.
It is a big deal. All right. Interesting update next time.
Yeah.
From you. Okay, so Luxon has
Luxon trip is much talked about. I hear a lot on the mainstream media. We quite like to call them the lamestream media. But anyway, I won't insult my friends in the.
I think you just have.
I know. Well, I didn't mean to. It was just not deliberate at all. I was just alluding
to it.
It's
just funny. Yeah.
It's just. But anyway, a lot talked about free trade. I think the word free trade is probably a bit of a misnomer. It's a trading relationship now. Free trade implies something that we did with New Zealand, did with the European Union and with the Brits. And they were very comprehensive, full-blown trade deals, and with China as well. With India, we're not going to get that. I think that's the starting point. And I really applaud what Lux and the government are doing at the moment by building the relationship with India, which, despite what others have said, it has been neglected. India is a big country. The Indian population are large in New Zealand. We have a lot in common with India. They love cricket. We sort of like to think we love it, or think we're not bad at it, and not too bad we are at it at times, have our moments. So there's a lot of that work going on now, and I know that Todd McClay, the Minister of Trade and the Minister of Agriculture, has been there, I think, 5 times in the last year to India. Luxon's going there now, a big deal. And I think I'm starting to hear some words which make sense to me, which are saying that, yes, there will be we will start to get some traction around trade. It may not be a comprehensive trade deal, but there may be some things that come right. Dairy will be there, but it might be the same as China, that it might be a long-term thing. Yes, we will progress dairy access there, but it might be over 20 years. So it might be in the thing, but it might be a long-term one. Right. The same at play with China. Bear in mind, India is a massive, great producer of dairy. Dairy farmers make up a large part of the voting population, as they do in Canada and as they do in China and in Europe. So it's not uncommon for New Zealand to deal with this. And so we might see that left on. We are seeing some movement around horticulture, probably. We may see something around meat, I don't know. But there's other things that can go in there. There might be things we might do to help them over things like providing science expertise for their farming things in exchange for. It'll be a different deal to what I think we've had in Europe and in the UK, particularly in recent times. And a little bit more like what we had in the Middle East, which was a little bit that way too.
Right.
So I think I would never use the word FTA with India. I just use a developing trading relationship would be the way I'd put it. And okay. I think Luxon, by the look of it, I mean, you can tell what I've saw on television, what I've heard on the radio, the team there did a pretty good job. I mean, they did the ritual thing. They took the Māori Concert Party. They take a couple of cricketers. They take a whole lot of business people. That's sort of standard. And the Air Force managed to get there and back without breaking down, which I think is probably the greatest miracle, probably the greatest achievement of the entire trade mission, is they managed to fly there and back without having to stop off and change planes and send everyone off on different things all over the place. But anyway, that was probably the greatest achievement of the entire operation.
Okay.
No offence to the Air Force, it's not their fault. So that's the thing, and I think that's something to watch, and we'll see more of that now coming up. The dairy people will not be happy, but I think they've just got to suck eggs, eat dead rats.
Okay, right.
Sorry, it's not everything's going to go everyone's way at the same time.
Well, talking about things going people's way, I'm looking at my shares that things aren't going so well, but the ongoing issue of Trump versus the world.
Yes, it's unpredictable. I mean, again, you've got to say that Winston Peters, I think, has handled the thing incredibly well. I know that the Foreign Affairs people wanted Winston Peters as the Minister for Foreign Affairs. They liked him from the previous time he was there. He did a good job, and they think he is a good editor. And judging by the way he's been dealing with things, you have to say he's done a pretty good job. I couldn't fault it. He's trying to play the game of let's just wait and see what they've got to say. Let's not try and jump in and let's not get into a dispute with them straight off. Let's see how we go and try and build a relationship. And that's what Luxon is doing and McClay is doing in India. We've got to start to build the relationship again with the United States, and it will be different, and it's important because the United States is a very big market for New Zealand produce, particularly. As we know, it's the biggest meat market now, I think, now gone from China than there now, so it's big. And it's interesting to hear some comments. One of the people I have a great deal of respect for is a guy called Mike Peterson, who used to be the special trade representative for farming, and Mike knows the world very well. And what he said to me was interesting. He said New Zealand can't engage in what he calls hard diplomacy. In other words, we've got nothing. We can't bring warships. We can't bring tanks. We can't bring this. But we're pretty good at relationship building. And he thinks the soft diplomacy will be the way that we'll go. And everything you've seen in what Peter's at the moment is going that way. It's been very, very tempered. Even if clearly he hasn't got things he wanted to, there's obviously some things hanging in the balance. He's really trying to play down any criticism of the United States at all, because we know that if we do that, they're in, you know, Trump could have one of his moments and get onto social media and do something stupid. So, and that's, you know,
yeah,
we don't mind him doing things stupid, but not for New Zealand's point of view.
He's trying to navigate a teenager, really, by the sounds of it, really, the way you're describing it.
I think
to teenagers.
Nancy Pelosi once said, you know, something like, you know, I know how young children behave. I've got grandchildren. You know, he should be in a playpen. But anyway, that's another issue because he's been inclined to throw his toys out the cot and then, you know, plays around and saying, oh, well, the nuclear button has Diet Coke on it. For God's sake.
Oh, my goodness.
Save me from that sort of thing. So what we are seeing, I think, is something now that we knew about. We've had the encounters in the Middle East with Gaza and Israel, and I won't get into that. We've got Ukraine, and now we've got the United States completely knowing, you wouldn't know where it's going to move next.
No.
It is, and that is playing out. And the sense that I get is that New Zealand may not be targeted specifically. We may get a little bit, but not much. But we'll get a bit of the crossfire of this stuff, that, you know, the shell won't be aimed at us, but the fragments might hit us a little bit on the side. So we might end up having to deal with that. And I think the way that we'll be able to get over that is that simply looking at it and saying, okay, if this happens, having lots of scenarios there, how can we deal with it? What should we do? We've got to be nimble, quick, and say, right, okay, we're going to do this, right, we'll do this, we'll get around that way. Like all laws, I always, you know, a bit of my Irish in me says, well, laws are there to be got around, not there to be necessarily obeyed. But that's, you know, that's my life. It's got me into trouble more times than one, in every respect, probably. So I think there's also a lot of movement around farmers saying they want to get out of the Paris Accord. Peters has said that as well. I'm not convinced that's... I think that was a bit to try and please the Trump thing. I'm not sure the government, the Nats, will actually buy that idea. I don't think that will happen. I think that's a little bit of diplomacy to try and say, we're on your side, guys. And then he can simply say, well, look, I was overruled by these other nasty people. The government, in my view, cannot pull out of, and others have said it to me, they cannot pull out of multilateral agreements like that. We just can't do it. There's too many other markets that are important to us, and they will demand that of us. So despite what everyone says, despite what Trump says, we can't go that way.
Right.
It's something that's keeping my watch on, because it is an interesting topic. Every morning you wake up and think, oh, my God, I almost hate listening to the news now.
Oh, yes. What's going to be there this morning, yeah.
Yeah, it's what's going to happen today, and I almost don't want to hear it.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't want to watch golf because it makes me feel so terrible. But anyway, so...
I've started to watch the Grand Prix because just, you know, yeah, I mean, watch people go around and around and around.
That's the wheel goes around and around and crashes, yeah, every now and again. Anyway.
All right, let's bring it closer to home then, something that we can actually understand. You've got three fine young Māori farmers contesting the Arawhenua.
Yes, we have.
We've young just, Māori farmers.
That's a wonderful thing, because there's two parts to Arawhenua. We have in Arawhenua we have the main competition, which is for the top Māori farmer of the year, entity of the year. So that's this year it's for sheep and beef. Other years, next year it'll be horticulture, and the following year it'll be back to dairy again. And that's the main competition. That's the Arawhenua trophy for that. But the good thing was, back in 2012, it was decided to add in, alongside this, a competition for the Arawhenua Young Māori Farmer. In other words, to recognise and to put some profile into young Māori coming through the system. And this year we've got three very fine young Māori finalists in this competition. Toby Warmington from Totokara, Grace Watson from Tikuiti, and Pohiri Tau from Ngāti Porou up around Gisborne Way. So there's three of those, and they've been named. They're 29, 24, 27, in different stages of their careers. Kobe's a farm manager, Grace has just started, and Pohiri has been around as a shepherd on the big Māori farmer in Gisborne for many, many years now. They're very fine people. So they're now vying for this competition. So what happens now is that we've announced them, and in the coming weeks we'll be going to the farms of the two finalists of the competition. That'll be the the two farms. One is up in north of Whangarei. I'm going up to that one. It'll be, I think it's, I'm going to drive to Whangarei. I'm mad, I know, but that's all right. and then on to the farm. It's about a two-hour drive from Whangarei to the farm. And then the other one's way out at Mahia Peninsula, and it's actually right out the tip. So where Rocket Lab launched their things from, that's one of the farms that have chosen as one of the finalists in this year's competition.
Oh, wow.
So so these young people will also be going out to those farms, and there'll be a chance for them to network, to meet people, and to get to know, hear some of the presentations, to see some of those farms, but mainly for them a networking experience, just to see how, and they'll be judged around that too, to see how they react in those situations. How do they perform in front of a group of people? How they mix? How do they relate? And that's going to go on for this. Those are coming up in the first week of April, and then we have to wait till the beginning of June before the competition, the awards dinner is, and the announcement of the winner of that young Māori farmer, and also the winner of the main competition. But I'm impressed with these young people. I think what's great about it is that we're now starting to see a movement around trying to future-proof Māori leadership, to build skills around the business, so that there's a whole cohort of young people coming through over the years. And what we've seen in the last, since the competition was started about 12 years ago, those winners and finalists have done incredibly well. They've all gone on to bigger things. They've all been recognised. Some of them have had overseas trips offered to them. They've been setting up their own social media systems, of encouraging other young people. Some of them actually become judges of the competition itself, so they've been on the judging panel of that competition. So they've all done very, very well. And what that shows is that there's a movement within Māori to make sure that they do have people coming in at all levels. They may not be at the manager level, they may be at the farm manager level, they may not be at the trustee level. They might be, we never know. But they will end up probably in some role in the future, where a leadership role of some significance in Māori. And we're seeing that. We're seeing certain aspects of Māori agri developing, like kiwifruit's a big example of that. Mm. It's probably the biggest, it's the fastest growing Māori form piece of agriculture at the moment. I'll have some more on that probably next time I'm around here talking about Māori, but just to sort of highlight the fact that there was a need for leadership, there's a need for training, and these young people are getting that at a very early stage in their careers, which is wonderful, and I have really quite thrilled at going in and seeing how these people work, because they're doing a great job. I'm really impressed with what they do, and it's a great privilege to be part of that. So we'll see how these young kids do, and it'll be a real test of what happens in the next few weeks and months as they go around to these places. They meet up with people, talk about things. It's going to be quite fascinating.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great. Tell me about this great initiative called
Science for Farmers. Yeah, it's a good thing. This is something that's almost trying to turn the clock back. I mean, back when I was an early journalist, there was a great deal of connection between the farmers and the scientists. At the National Field Race in Ruakura and Hamilton, there was always a farmers' conference run beforehand, whereby the scientists at Ruakura gave talks, lectures, and took farmers out on their farms there and showed them what they're doing. That's been lost because some idiot, politician or bureaucrat, and I don't apologise for saying that if they're listening, I'm telling you what I think of you, decided to dismember MAF as it was. And that link between the farm advisor and the scientist and the policymaker was broken. It was stupid. Mm. And the Irish have managed to look at New Zealand and say, we don't want a bar of that stupidity. And they've kept an organisation going called CHOGUS. TEAGAS.
CHOGUS.
It's CHOGUS, if you want to put CHOGUS. But it actually looks like TGAS.
Okay.
But it's CHOGUS. It's CHOGUS. It's Irish.
Yeah.
And CHOGUS is an amalgam of farm advisors, farm educators, policymakers, people out in the field environment, and policymakers, right up to the minister. So there's this unbroken line of contact between the farmer and the scientist through to the policymaker, which means that policymakers get some good feedback of what's going on the farm.
Mm.
At the moment, it's sort of sporadic. There was some going through, but what we're seeing with this idea of science for farming, it's set up by MPI, And that's partly because John Roach is the head of on-farm research. He's also Irish. He knows Chagas very well. He took his boss, Ray Smith, to Chagas, to the National Ploughing Championships, which isn't actually the national, which isn't actually all about ploughing. It's actually about the field days. But anyway, they have it's they call it the ploughing in Ireland, but actually it's more about, it's like our field days. It's okay. Only bigger. It's they get 300,000 people over there in over 3 days. And he saw what was going on there. And clearly this is an attempt to try and bring the science providers such as the universities, Massey, LIC, Livestock Improvement, and other science providers into one tent, if you like. Mm. And they did that at the last year's field days. They're going to do it bigger. But we've just had a big run of that at the field days all around the country, where farmers at these shows can walk in and chat to the scientists and say, what the hell's going on, mate? You know, I've got this problem down in my face. What do I do with it, mate? And they'll say, well, actually, we're doing this and we're doing that and we're helping you out in this way. So you're getting this interaction. And interesting, John was telling me that when he went around farmers, the first thing they complained about was the lack of not seeing a scientist. When he went around the universities, the first thing they complained about was not seeing a farmer.
Oh, there you go.
So there we go. So it's great. And I think it's a wonderful initiative. Full marks to MPI for doing it. And I think that's a great thing. They had a stand at field days, at Central District Field Days, which I went to, and I thought that was really great to see that going on. So that's one of my own passions, is to see this movement towards of getting scientists and farmers together, chatting informally, passing up ideas, getting them up to the policymakers so we don't get stupid decisions made around regulations, which we have a lot of. I mean, that's why we've got these reforms going with the RMA at the moment, because some of the people who make rules have never worn a pair of red bands in their life and never seen a farm in their lives. Probably don't know how many anyone won't go about a sheep, but anyway, the difference between a male and a female, probably, and then they're making rules about them. That's what I feel is the issue.
Yeah.
So that's my little bit of, you know, recollections of rowdiness, if you like.
Oh, that's pretty gorgeous. Hey, listen, we haven't got much time left, but you mentioned the Irish a couple of times. We had an Irish minister here.
Yeah, we did. We had Jerry Buttimer here, and a very nice guy. He was every year around St. Patrick's Day, the Irish send out ministers of all the top level to low level all around the world to places where there are Irish people. Jerry got the nod to come to New Zealand. He was a very personable and lovely guy. He's actually Minister for Rural Affairs, and he was interested to see what he'd been here before. He had a look around again. He went to the Rural Games up in Palmerston North. But I think what the point about the Irish and New Zealand is, we are both pasture-based economies. We're similar sizes. We do similar things. And therefore, it's very logical that we have a lot of cooperation. We do already. I mean, there's no universities and others have a great deal of cooperation. Massey with University College of Dublin and others, there's lots of it. But this is just reinforcing that position, to saying, okay, and he was there to do that, to see people, to talk to people. Also, they're very interested in doing things with Māori, because the Irish language is very important in Ireland, obviously. Māori language important here. So there is a network of Irish, of Māori business people who relate to Ireland. And there's been a number of visits of Māori business people and others to Ireland to see what's being done there. That, I think, is a great thing, because there's a lot of cultural things which we can build on. And, of course, rugby's vaguely mentioned. You can well imagine. In the kindest of ways, of course. They no one forgets the Chicago match, of course, you know, Soldiers Field, when the All Blacks suddenly got beaten by this bunch of, you know, Irish characters. Anyway.
All comes down to rugby. Well, hey, thank you very much for that update, Peter Burke. That's been Farming Aotearoa, sponsored by Rural News, the newspaper that gets the top stories to farmers every week. Thanks, Pete.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.org.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.